Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Pete Anderson. Today I'll be reading from the March 18th, 2024 edition of the Hartford Business Journal. The first story we're looking at today is titled On Demand Care. This story is subtitled As Telehealth Popularity Persists, Connecticut Sees Growth of Virtual Care Clinics. Hartford Healthcare has launched a second OnMed telehealth site in the capital city after opening its first virtual care clinic in Killingly in late 2023. Through a partnership with medical technology company OnMed, Hartford Healthcare says its new clinic offers a wide range of non-emergency services in a completely virtual setting where clinicians appear on screen from a remote location. Virtual care sites such as OnMed and DocsNow through Yale New Haven Health were born out of the COVID-19 pandemic, which proliferated the use of telehealth. Experts say the concept has staying power. The first Hartford Healthcare OnMed location opened in December in the Stop & Shop supermarket in Killingly. Patients ages 2 and up can use an OnMed care station, which is open 7 days a week with no appointment needed. When patients visit the clinic, they are prompted to register and follow instructions on using the OnMed medical equipment to take virtual measurements like height, weight, and blood pressure. Patients consult with licensed clinical professionals through a virtual connection in real time. Hartford Healthcare said an OnMed station can address a myriad of ailments such as infections, respiratory issues, headaches, heartburn, and allergies. Deborah Hayes, Chief Integration Officer for Hartford Healthcare, said the OnMed stations are about expanding access to healthcare services. If you're sick, it's challenging to get a primary care appointment, Hayes said, so we've been working hard to create alternative, innovative, more affordable options so the patients can actually get the care when they need it when they're sick. Hartford Healthcare and OnMed plan to open at least 3 clinics in Connecticut. The second location is at nonprofit The Villages for Families and Children's Wethersfield Avenue office in Hartford. A third location has not yet been identified. Hayes cited a multifaceted approach to selecting locations, with one in a grocery store in a more rural part of the state where healthcare centers are sparse and busy. The Village Clinic brings healthcare services to underserved communities in a more urban setting. It's available not only to patients and families that utilize the village's services, but also those in the surrounding community, Hayes said. Insurance is accepted for the clinic, but is not required. The clinics are not meant for emergency or life-threatening situations. Hayes said the patients requiring more advanced care for ailments or immunizations can get referrals from an OnMed provider. The concept is similar to a virtual health clinics launched in 2023 by Yale New Haven Health and DocsNow, but that model features a technician taking vital signs and checking for ailments with a doctor turning into a consult virtually. The Hartford Healthcare OnMed model doesn't require a technician to be on hand. During a typical OnMed visit, which lasts approximately 30 minutes, a patient logs in and a medical assistant comes on the screen. He or she will capture key vitals such as weight, blood pressure, and oxygen levels. The clinic has high-definition cameras and medical equipment for looking into the ears and throats or listening to hearts and lungs that descend from the ceiling. A virtual medical technician directs the patient on how to use the tools. It's incredibly high technology. It's very innovative, Hayes said. This is actually the future of healthcare. The telehealth concept goes back decades, but it saw explosive growth in the months following the pandemic. The Journal of the American Medical Association reports that telehealth visits increased from 840,000 in 2019 to 52.7 million in 2020 during the pandemic. According to the Centers for Disease Control, 37% of adults used telemedicine in 2021, and virtual care used among physicians went from 15% in 2019 to 86% in 2021. As COVID-era restrictions eased, the use of telehealth did subside somewhat, but experts say it remains a more popular option for convenience, safety, and access compared to pre-pandemic times. That's pushed state policymakers to alter laws that govern the use of telehealth in Connecticut several times since 2020, including provisions that expanded service delivery methods and the types of providers authorized to provide virtual care. This year, the legislature is considering a bill that would extend COVID-era telehealth provisions until June 30, 2027. The provisions, which relax some telehealth rules, are set to expire in June. The bill has several components. It requires telehealth providers to communicate with patients through real-time interactive and two-way technology and have knowledge of a patient's medical history. It also permits telehealth providers to prescribe medication, but only certain controlled substances. Extending telehealth access is important, Hayes said, especially in the face of national nursing and provider shortages. About 100,000 registered nurses left the U.S. workforce during the past 2 years due to stress, burnout, and retirement, and another 610,388 reported intentions to leave by 2027, according to a study by the National Council of State Boards of Nursing. Patients face another obstacle to assessing care, like long waits to see a primary care physician, lack of proximity to a doctor's offices in some communities, or difficulty getting transportation to an appointment. That's where telehealth services and virtual care clinics can help fill access gaps, Hayes said. State Senator Saad Anwar, a Democrat from South Windsor, who is a physician and co-chair of the Public Health Committee, said telehealth has proven benefits, including convenience and providing better access to care. Virtual care can be especially helpful in helping address some mental health care-related issues. However, despite its many benefits, patients should be careful not to make telehealth their default treatment option. Telehealth is a short-term, intermediate support for certain circumstances, he said, and doesn't take the place of meeting regularly with a primary care physician or a specialist who knows a patient more thoroughly. The best care is in-person care, Anwar said, so we should not make telehealth the main way of providing care to individuals. He said there is a balance to getting the best from both options. The bottom line is there's going to be many things where you actually need to have a face-to-face with a provider, and we recognize that, she said. But if there are concerns that we can help patients with that don't require an in-person visit, it's actually much more convenient for the patient. Turning now to our next story from the Hartford Business Journal. This is titled, Bill to Allow Chambers and Trade Groups to Pool Members for Health Benefits Gains Support. Legislation that would allow trade association and chambers of commerce to pool their members and offer self-funded health benefits has received broad private sector approval. Representatives of about 50 organizations, including chambers of commerce, trade groups, nonprofit organizations, and private businesses, recently presented testimony to the state legislature's Insurance and Real Estate Committee in support of House Bill 5247. The legislation would allow qualifying chambers of commerce and trade associations to act as one large employer and offer their members self-funded health insurance benefits that would be strictly regulated. In his testimony, Wyatt Bosworth, a lobbyist for the Connecticut Business and Industry Association, described the bill as the most comprehensive, consumer-friendly Multiple Employer Welfare Agreement, or MEWA, legislation in the country. He said it would provide small employers a new option for health care benefits. one of the only tools small employers have that can boost workforce and productivity is the ability to offer comprehensive benefit packages that include affordable and benefit-rich health plans, Bosworth said. Unfortunately, due to the volatile market conditions, the small group market is becoming more consolidated and less affordable every year. Connecticut has seen multiple insurers exit the small group, fully insured health insurance market in recent years, including ConnectiCare and Harvard Pilgrim. The insurers currently offering fully insured small group health plans in the state for employers with 50 or fewer workers are Anthem, Cigna, Aetna, Oxford Health, and United Healthcare. In 2023, they covered 75,830 lives, down 28.9% from the 106,658 lives covered by fully insured small group plans 2 years earlier. Between 2016 and 2022, the average annual single premium per enrolled employee for employer-based health insurance in Connecticut rose 25.9%, according to Bosworth. As a result of these increases, small employers are increasingly shifting away from small group market to self-funded and level-funded products in order to control costs while maintaining competitive benefit plans, he said. Bosworth cited a recent survey by the National Federation of Independent Businesses, or NFIB, which found that 94% of small employers find it challenging to some degree to manage the cost of offering employer-sponsored health insurance. Allowing the creation of MEWA trusts would benefit small employers, he said, while adding the plans are subject to rigorous financial and solvency oversight by the respective state's Department of Insurance, as well as the Federal Department of Labor. The bill contains several requirements for any health plan offered by associations, including direct regulatory oversight by the state insurance and labor departments, strict requirements to offer robust plan benefits and design on par with the Federal Affordable Care Act, or ACA, market, cover all ACA consumer protections codified under the Federal Employee Retirement Income Security Act, or ERISA, maintain stop loss, apply constant pooling points, and offer plans on a guaranteed issue and guaranteed renewable basis. Other organizations that spoke in favor of the legislation included the NFIB, the Credit Union League of Connecticut, Motor Transport Association of Connecticut, Connecticut Retail Network, Connecticut Bar Association, and National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals. Several organizations presented testimony opposed to the legislation, including the American Lung Association, Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, National Multiple Sclerosis Society, American Cancer Society, Connecticut Citizen Action Group, and the State Commission on Racial Equity in Public Health. Patient advocacy groups were opposed to a similar bill last year, concerned it would lead to the adoption of bare-bones health plans that sidestep state insurance coverage mandates. Tom Swan, executive director of the Connecticut Citizens Action Group, said his organization believes the bill will weaken consumer protections, discriminate against employers with older and sicker employees, and destabilize the existing individual and small business marketplace. Turning now to our next story from the Hartford Business Journal. This is titled Retail Care. This story is subtitled, In Growing Outpatient Bone and Joint Care Market, Orthopedic Associates Debuts Storefront Clinic. If you're seeking a location for a new orthopedic clinic, it makes sense to open it just down the street from the shops at Evergreen Walk, an upscale retail center in South Windsor that invites people to leisurely stroll from store to store while they shop. After all, you can't enjoy shopping if your back, knee, or foot hurts. Yet the newest patient care center for Orthopedic Associates of Hartford is at 25 Buckland Road, represents more than just going where people are, said OAH President Dr. Pietro Memmo. It's actually an example of a national healthcare trend. What's happening in healthcare is that orthopedics is migrating from being inpatient to outpatient, Memmo said, during a recent ceremony marking the opening of the clinic. This is really the first time that Orthopedic Associates of Hartford has gone a little bit more retail. The new 6,000-square-foot facility is located in a small shopping center next door to Recovery, a tattoo removal shop, and a Hartford Healthcare Go Health Urgent Care Center. Across the parking lot are martial arts schools, vape shop, barbershop, and a mattress store. It's a vastly different setting from where clinic was previously located about 3 miles away at 29 Haines Street in Manchester, next to Manchester Memorial Hospital. Normally, we're in the healthcare hubs in Farmington, Glastonbury, what have you, Memmo said. South Windsor was really the crossroads for this region where patients can come from so many communities, whether it's Manchester, Vernon, East Hartford, or Ellington. They can come here instead of traveling so far like they have in the past. The new location serves as an office for as many as 20 orthopedic specialists and offers a wide range of services, including specialized care for joint replacement, sports injuries, spine conditions, foot, ankle, hand, wrist, and elbow issues, and general orthopedic care. It also offers physical therapy, x-rays, and cast application and removal. The South Windsor location is not a surgical center. OAH has surgical facilities in Glastonbury and Rocky Hill and co-manages the Bone and Joint Institute in Hartford with Hartford Healthcare. But it's another example of an independent orthopedic group investing in outpatient clinics. According to a report from Grandview Research, a San Francisco-based market intelligence firm, the U.S. Orthopedic Ambulatory Surgical Center market was valued at $10.1 billion in 2022 and is expected to grow 4.6% per year from 2023 to 2030. The report attributes that growth to the lower cost of surgeries performed in ambulatory surgical centers versus hospitals. It cites research from the Rothman Orthopedic Institute in Philadelphia and Hospital for Special Surgery in New York that found that treatment in ambulatory surgical centers cost about 40% less than hospital-based outpatient departments. The trend in healthcare for a number of years has been for procedures that used to have been performed in an inpatient hospital setting with an extended length of inpatient stay are now performed in an outpatient setting, said Arnold Menschel, a partner with Hartford law firm Haller & Sage, which represents hospital, medical providers, and other healthcare-related facilities. Menschel said there is a domino effect that results from the shift to outpatient procedures and that some things that used to require an outpatient setting can now be done in an office setting. For example, hip replacement surgery was once strictly an inpatient procedure that required a week's stay in a hospital, he said. Now, in the right circumstances, it's not uncommon to have it done in an outpatient basis in an ambulatory surgical center with the patient going home the same day. Menschel said there are several reasons for the trend that are favorable for the patients, the providers, and the payers. Patients don't spend time in a hospital, reducing the risk of infection, also recovering more comfortably at home. Surgeons have easier access to outpatient operating rooms compared to competing for time in the hospital OR, and they are now more likely to own part of the ambulatory surgical center, he said. OAH, in fact, is a privately held, independent partnership of 20 physicians. Lastly, as noted by the Grandview report, it is generally substantially cheaper to do a procedure in an ambulatory surgical center than in a hospital, Menschel said, because a center doesn't have to be staffed 24/7, nor do they have to offer all of the services that hospitals do. So they are much less expensive. The hospitals also recognize these facts and are investing in ambulatory surgical centers as well, Menchel added. The trend continues on down the line so that some diagnostic tests and rehabilitation treatments that used to be done in an outpatient facility are now able to be performed in an office setting, as is possible in OAH's new South Windsor facility. Memo said patients also demand outpatient care, as do insurance companies and even centers for Medicaid and Medicare services. I predict that in the next year or so, in order to do inpatient orthopedic procedures, you'd better have a good reason for it, Memo said. Menchel noted that outpatient facilities are often equally well equipped. Underlying all of these changes and advances in technology and techniques in terms of diagnostic, surgical, and rehabilitative equipment, Menchel said. OAH has invested in the high-tech equipment that helps make surgeries less invasive, Memo said, citing Makoplasty, robotics used for full or partial knee replacement or for hip replacement surgery, and Mazor, a robotics guidance system used for spinal surgery. The precision that is now offered by these robotics cuts the amount of time it takes to do these cases and reduces the amount of pain control required after the procedure, Memo said. OAH also invested last year in an Epic electronic medical record system, which he calls a game changer. I never realized how much information and data we are missing, Memo said. Now I have 360-degree view of my patients. I had nothing close to that last year. Epic also has made providing care from coordinating prescriptions and scheduling procedures to billing and receiving payments more efficient, saving administrative costs. All of this, he added, has gained the attention of national health systems looking to switch to value-based care, which favors the quality of care over the quantity of patients treated while seeking to reduce costs. We've been approached, and we are doing some of that with health systems like ProHealth, Optum, and United Health, Memo said. He added that OAH has been focused on investing in its facilities because its anticipated change to outpatient treatment, as well as the cost of out-of-state companies entering the market. In addition to the South Windsor facility, OAH has orthopedic urgent care facilities in Farmington and Glastonbury. OAH invested in its facilities, Memo said, knowing that if we want to sustain and compete with all of these entities, we will have to be vertically integrated where we have a place like this where we can offer one-stop shopping. We've been in practice for 50 years, he added. I'm committing to you that we're going to make the investment to stay in business for another 50 years. Turning now to our next story from the Hartford Business Journal. This is titled, Woman-Led Cannabis Startup Looks to Make Its Mark in Connecticut. A woman-led multi-state cannabis startup is moving into the Connecticut market, eyeing a retail location in East Lyme. It also has plans to open a grow facility in the state as well as an additional dispensary. Soulstar is one of the few women-led cannabis companies operating in the country, but that's not the only thing that makes it unique. It recently raised private equity funds to pay Connecticut state regulators $3 million provisional licensing fee, which has been criticized for being a barrier to entry into the industry. Soulstar has been pursuing a Disproportionately Impacted Area, or DIA, cultivator license, which requires it to team up with a social equity partner or someone from a community that has been disproportionately harmed by cannabis prohibition and enforcement. Of the 26 companies that have been selected as DIA cultivators by the state's Social Equity Council, half have paid a $3 million license fee, and only one company has been issued a final license and is operational, according to the State Department of Consumer Protection. Soulstar is one of a dozen companies that have been issued a provisional DIA cultivator license, which is the final stage before a company can open for business. Solstar is led by CEO Amanda Rositano, Chief Operating Officer Fran DeRogatis, both of Massachusetts, and Chief Administrative Officer Katie Covett of West Hartford. The company recently opened its first dispensary in Bloomfield, New Jersey, under the brand name Nightjar. Solstar won its Connecticut license through the state's Social Equity Council and raised funds to cover the license fee from a single private investor, a Massachusetts woman who was inspired by our team and our ability to do something different in the cannabis industry, Rositano said, declining to name the individual. Raising that kind of capital, especially under social equity guidelines, is challenging, Covett said. To do it, the company founders said they conducted hundreds of meetings and calls with possible investors, including large investment firms. Of that pool, there were very few female investors, Rositano said. The partners also participated in a months-long social equity training program created by California-based Oaksterdam University, which offered courses on all aspects of businesses, including delivering a solid pitch to gain investor interest. The trio eventually took part in a pitch contest promoting their all-female platform and diversity and inclusion mission, which attracted the one investor, they said. Solstar this spring plans to open its first Connecticut retail site under the Nightjar brand at 15 Colton Road in a property owned by East Lyme resident and company partner Lori Zenda. Zenda, who previously owned and managed a Connecticut medical marijuana dispensary in Montville, bought the East Lyme property for $700,000 in 2021. A year later, the space won town approval to operate as a cannabis dispensary. Under its license type, Solstar can open a grow facility and two dispensaries. Location for the cultivation plant and second retail site have not yet been chosen, the founders said. They plan to become profitable within the first year of opening their East Lyme dispensary, the founders said. Turning now to the Biz Brief section of the Hartford Business Journal, Farmington Manufacturer acquires New Jersey company with plans to move its operations to Connecticut. A Farmington-based precision manufacturer has acquired a New Jersey company and planned to move its production to Connecticut. Connecticut Spring and Stamping, or CSS, which is headquartered at 48 Spring Lane, purchased Trico Tool and Manufacturing effective February 1, 2024. CSS is a family-owned company started more than 85 years ago, producing metal springs, progressive stampings, fine blank stampings, machined components and assembles for numerous industries. Trico is a precision stamping house that focuses on complex, progressive dies and production for government, commercial, electrical, and aerospace markets. CSS says Trico will continue manufacturing in New Jersey for 3 to 6 months. After that, CSS plans to move all production to its three facilities in Farmington and Southington. CSS says it intends to hire about 15 people to support the Trico acquisition. It also has an additional 15 open positions posted on its website. Well, that's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading from the March 18th, 2024 edition of the Hartford Business Journal. I'm Pete Anderson. So long until next time.